Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Today, we will speak with Sarah Jean Rudman, who is just a wealth of knowledge and information about yoga, Ayurveda, health coaching, and many, many other things, including nutrition. And the beautiful thing about what Sarah will share with us today is that there are time-tested ancient rituals and lifestyle medicine, things that we can do to feel better more of the time. So many of us are dealing with insomnia, anxiety, depression, burnout, chronic pain. And a lot of times, through all of the different healthcare practitioners that we go to, we're left without a lot of choices. We don't always get our problems resolved by going to licensed healthcare practitioners, although we love them and we are so happy to have them. There are certain things that I think even licensed healthcare practitioners would say, wow, it would be really nice to have someone who could help with these things, that I don't want to tell my person with fibromyalgia, I can't help you. Or I don't want to tell my person that has chronic low back pain that the only thing that may help you is surgery on your low back. I found that when we start as integrative healthcare practitioners to kind of be complementary towards to LHC people, and complimentary meaning we like you, we care about you, we think you're doing a great job, but also complimentary meaning we want to work side by side with you and help support all of the things that you're doing. Once we get into that mindset, it is pretty easy to get doctors, nurses, physician assistants to actually make referrals, as well as psychologists that maybe want people to have some new ideas about lifestyle routines, how to get better sleep, what to do when you get anxious, how to keep your diet clean. You know, the ancient teachings of yoga and Ayurveda have a lot of ideas. And as you'll hear so many times in this episode, once you learn them, they are yours to use and to share, and they're free. They're things that people have been doing for 3,000 years, 5,000 years, 7,000 years that we know work. So as we go into this episode with Sarah Jean Rudman, who is a professor of Ayurveda at Maryland University of Integrative Health, as we go into this episode, we talk about healthcare providers, we talk about educators, we talk about parents and families. What are all the ways that we can use these natural lifestyle routines from India to help us feel better more of the time? So let's get right into it with Sarah Jean Rudman, and I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. This is Amy Wheeler, and I want to thank all the people who've come forward in 2025 to tell their stories. We are completely booked through the end of the year, so we will not be taking any more stories. In fact, many weeks I'm recording two every Thursday because so many people were willing to share of themselves, to be generous and gracious, to help other people to suffer less. It's been quite a year. We're so happy that we have another several months of stories to share on the Yoga Therapy Hour. But just to say that at this time, we're no longer needing people to volunteer. The response has been amazing. I feel overjoyed with so many of you willing to give of yourself to help others suffer less. We thank you. We're glad you're here. Let's go see our guest for today. Welcome, Sarah Jean. So nice to see you. How are you?
Thanks. So good to see you too. I'm doing well today. How are you?
Wonderful. It's a beautiful day in Minnesota. Where are you, Sarah Jean?
I'm in Glastonbury, Connecticut, and it is a rainy, rainy day with a nor'easter on the horizon. So it's a very strange day here today.
Wow. The weather has been wacky in the U.S. I just have to say, everywhere I go, I was in Maryland last weekend for graduation for Maryland University of Integrative Health, and they had a huge storm that closed a bunch of roads because trees fell down, and yeah, It's a lot. There's a lot going on. I think the universe is in chaos right now.
Yes, and Mother Nature is not happy about it.
All right. So, Sarah Jean, how did you start in Ayurveda? Like, what was your first encounter with Ayurveda?
That's a good question. So it was 2009, and I was a newbie at Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health. I had just done my first 200-hour yoga teacher training, and two people came in to talk to us about something that was fairly new at Kripalu. Only four classes or three classes had gone through, and it was the Kripalu School of Ayurveda. And honestly, we hadn't had a lot of Ayurvedic training within our YTT. That is now a really big component of it, but back then it really wasn't. And I thought, oh my gosh, this sounds amazing. I'm already a fitness professional. I was a group fitness instructor, personal trainer, yoga teacher, and sort of, not a trained wellness coach. In those positions, I was ending up kind of in that wellness space. I thought this was a wonderful way to bring more knowledge into everything I did. So I signed right up. I did the foundations of Ayurveda there, an Ayurvedic yoga specialist training, a full Ayurvedic practitioner training, and then a 500-hour Ayurvedic yoga teacher training there right away. And so that was my
Well,
first foray into Ayurveda.
and then you went on later to do an Ayurvedic training for licensed healthcare practitioners, right?
Yeah, so from there, I ended up coming on to the Kripalu School of Ayurveda as their intern. So I got to live in residence there for a full year. That was absolutely amazing, teaching, working with curriculum, being on campus for a full year. While I was there, I realized that there was a lot of stuff that was keeping people from doing Ayurveda, a lot of socioeconomic disparities that were not allowing people to pay out of pocket for Ayurveda. It was going to cost a couple hundred dollars for an hour consultation, or at least 125. And I wanted to help more people and also merge the biomedical and the complementary and alternative practice of Ayurveda, so I had more of a language and an impact. So I went to Maryland University of Integrative Health in 2014 to do my Master's of Science in Clinical Nutrition, which I did, and I did a post-baccalaureate certificate in health and wellness coaching and loved the behavior change part of it. So all this while I was living at Kripalu, I signed up to do a second master's in health and wellness coaching. And so I did all of those so that I had the, sort of Eastern, Western, and more holistic behavior change models in my pocket. And I wanted to dive even deeper into Ayurveda. So I signed up and did the MAVEM degree, so the Master's of Ayurvedic and Integrative Medicine at Maharishi International University, to really get an even more formal education as an academic in that particular field.
Oh my God. That's
Yeah.
six degrees that you went, and it really encompasses all of Western fitness, yoga, Ayurvedic yoga, health coaching, Ayurveda in a more kind of integrative way, which we'll talk about in a minute. Like, you really just covered all the bases. So now we get to say you are a professor at Maryland University of Integrative Health in the Ayurveda department, yoga therapy and Ayurveda department. And you and I have talked a lot about this idea of integrative Ayurveda, which is a little different than maybe a more classical type of Ayurveda. But what does integrative Ayurveda mean to you?
Yeah. So the idea of integrative health, as we teach at MUIH, the idea of integrative health is the intersection of complementary and alternative medicine. So CAM practices like Ayurveda, biomedicine, conventional medicine, which would be like your traditional MD or even a DO would be considered, biomedical, APRN, biomedical, your GP, and self-care. And, in the middle of those three circles, that's integrative medicine. And so the idea of integrative Ayurveda is that it's bringing in the language and the models of all of these different approaches. It's the care for the practitioner as well as the care for the client or the patient, and the language can bridge both. So Ayurveda can act as a complement to a regular biomedical path as well. Charaka Samhita, one of our traditional texts that we use in Ayurveda that you personally have studied very deeply, talks about how this medicine must change with the times. It's not about a dogmatic or ritualistic approach, but instead it's about a very malleable and ever-changing, nuanced qualitative approach. So the idea of integrative Ayurveda is taking these very traditional qualitative ways of living, these routines. And they are rituals, right? They're not dogmatic rituals, but they're beautiful, wonderful rituals of self-care and aligning them with the modern world we live in. How can Ayurveda help support the medical doctor who's working with a patient who is struggling with type 2 diabetes? How could Ayurveda support somebody who's working with fertility or having a baby? Or how could Ayurveda support somebody's mental health that's also working with a psychologist? And I think that's really where Ayurveda can shine, is coming in an integrative and collaborative way instead of as a standalone.
Yeah, I remember my medical doctor, who I chose specifically because she was a Western trained MD, but she was an Indian woman who also believed totally in Ayurveda. So she would kind of allow me to talk with her about, what I thought was happening from an Ayurvedic perspective during our regular doctor's appointments that were covered by insurance. So this is kind of the model that I have in my head. And she would even go as far as to, find a way to get me certain tests to kind of figure out if our hypothesis about what was going on with me could be correct, looking at it from an Ayurvedic perspective. So I'm thinking of that. I don't know if that's kind of what you're describing, that like a medical doctor or physician assistant could use Ayurveda like in the background to inform some of their ways of thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one beautiful and I think very impactful way to use integrative Ayurveda. Another way would, of course, to have an Ayurvedic practitioner on hand that you could collaborate with. But that is absolutely, I think, a very powerful way if we can get our doctors and our nurses to understand this language and understand that they may be giving the diagnosis or the prescription, the treatment plan for a particular situation. That's fantastic. We need that. That's life-saving, life-changing, needed medical care. The Ayurvedic stuff is, it's the stuff we can do ourselves. That's the toolbox that we can give our patients or our clients to take home and say, hey, here are the reins back for your own well-being and health. You actually have control over a lot of this. I want to empower you for that. Right? You're not looking to me. I don't want you to nod and say, yes, I'll do that. Yes, I'll do this, and ask me another question. I want you to listen and look and feel and know that you're strong and you can ask me questions, but you're the pilot and I'm the co-pilot in this situation, which really also leans into the integrative health perspective of patient-practitioner relationship. You know, there's this collaborative effort where the patient or the client is really the one driving the force. And from an optimal health perspective, the doctor or whoever they're working with is the person that's there to support them, to help them build awareness, to help them gain access to resources, to help them know when they need the resources, and to also be, you know, leaned on in times of need. So I think Ayurveda can really be a beautiful qualitative lens to look through for any licensed healthcare professional.
I completely agree with you about all of that. And I remember when my doctor took the Maharishi course, which is pretty similar to what we have at MUOH. I mean, there are some differences, but we have some great courses at MUOH that kind of fit this model too. That she basically said, it wasn't a super, super, super in-depth training that made her like a vaidya, It was more, simple things that Western trained medical professional could use with their clients on the spot and not feel so overwhelmed with a lot of complexity. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and one of the major tenets of Ayurveda is to treat with opposites. So if somebody's coming into your office and they're feeling so overwhelmed, I've got these health things and all of these responsibilities, I don't know how I'm going to take care of myself. We treat complex with simple. What if we narrowed it down to how would it change your life to wake up every morning around sunrise, drink some warm water, have your morning bell movement, do some sense cleansing, and go for a walk in nature? Like, what would shift in your life to add those super simple and free things that are profound in people's lives? They're not doing them because they don't have permission to do them. Ayurveda gives you permission to be intuitive and to take care of yourself in a natural way that doesn't have the like exogenous effect that a lot of, you know, pharmacology can have, right? We tend to lean and look toward what's the medicine I need to treat the thing that I have, where it could also be what's the life I need to avoid the thing I don't want to have. And I think that's so empowering, and it's free. Most of it is free. So yes, it's simple and free, and it's there for us.
Anybody listening, if your medical doctor said exactly what Sarah Jean just said, that I'd like you to get up, have some warm water, maybe some lemon, and then clean your senses, scrape your tongue, and wash your eyes out, maybe splash a little rose water on there, and then get out in nature for even 10 or 15 minutes and let the light come into your eyes and smell the fresh air and go for a little walk, get your muscles pumping a little bit. Those are no small thing. That changes your whole day and your perception and your connection to your deeper self. Like, I think that would be amazing if doctors would give simple, free things like that.
I agree with you. Yeah. And it would be really also from like an earth standpoint, such an economical way to embody preventative health care. We're not using resources that we don't need to use. We're just using what we have on hand. The outside is free. It's right there.
Absolutely. So, how do we navigate this balance between a more traditional Ayurvedic framework and what we call evidence-based medicine, if you will, when we bring these practices into more professional environments in the West? How do we navigate that? Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, as a researcher myself, I've honestly found that a lot of the things that Ayurveda is asking us to do, they are proven in science too, right? Like what you're talking about right now, for example, going outside and letting the light come into your eyes and having that change your day. Will that change your day on a spiritual, subtle, like kind of, especially if you're doing it in the time of Brahma, that like early pre-sunrise, expansive, ethereal, airy vata time of the day, the time of creation? That is a spiritual, godlike, divine experience for sure. I know that sounds extreme or dramatic, but that's how I feel about it. There's also a ton of research on circadian entrainment and how walking outside, and I think the number is like around 10,000 lux, LUX, that you need in order to balance out your hormones for the day. So just a little quick like elevator speech on that, right? There's a reciprocal relationship between cortisol and melatonin. You have something called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. And so you can think about your hypothalamus. It's like a tongue that tastes your blood, and it will then signal your pituitary gland to release hormones that will tell your adrenal glands to release certain hormones. In the morning, when we wake up, we have this burst of epinephrine, norepinephrine, stress hormones, antidiuretic hormone. That's why we have to go pee. And then the cortisol comes up because the hypothalamus tastes the blood, and it's like, oh, all this stuff is here. Cortisol is actually an anti-inflammatory. It's a buffer to the stress hormones. And we have that big burst in the morning. And then, there's this reciprocal relationship between the light and melatonin, which will calm us down at night. And so if we get out in the light, our body is then hormonally regulating. It's like, oh, it's daytime. It's go time. Keep the hormones that keep us going all day going. And as that light starts to go down, right, the non-visual cells in our pituitary gland, the non-visual photoreceptor cells in our pituitary gland are aware that the light is going down, that there's less and less lux coming into the brain, and it will start to boost up your melatonin. And so now your melatonin is going to start to boost up, and we get something called the dimming sometime around like 7:30 to 8:30, where the melatonin rushes in and we get tired. And ideally, we go to bed. We don't because of screens and artificial lights. And
I was just going to say that.
yeah, but ideally, that's the time of kapha in Ayurveda. That's the time that we would be winding down right there. That 6 to 10 p.m. is the time of heaviness. It's the time of earth and water. So all that extremely long elevator speech, it was a long ride. We went to like the 37th floor. But all that to say, the Ayurveda is actually proven in science in a lot of ways. So I think the trick is getting people who are versed in research, who have medical training, who have research training, who are able to interpret and read and sort of understand, whether it's a clinical nutritionist or a yoga therapist or a medical doctor or an advanced nurse practitioner, OBGYN, whoever, a DC, a DO, any of these people who already know the science, know how to research the science, know how to see the science, trained in Ayurveda, they're going to know the parallels and draw on them. They'll be able to read the research, interpret it, and say, oh my gosh, yes, what this is saying is this works. Ayurveda didn't need that 7,000 years ago. Like, we didn't have RCTs, we didn't have meta-analyses, we didn't have PubMed and Google Scholar and ChatGPT and all the things, but the science is there, Amy. I think the answer is just drawing the lines for people and having a common language.
We are going to take just a moment for a little break, and then we'll be right back to the show. We want to take some time to tell you about our Monday night Sangha or community. We've been together for 3 or 4 years now. I can't remember how many years. And every Monday night, we come together and we talk. We talk about what matters. We talk about Yoga Sutra. We talk about what it means to be human. And then we do a few gentle postures, followed by some breath work, some yoga nidra meditation. And then we bring it all together at the end for anyone who wants to stay to talk about why we chose the postures, the meditation, the breathing techniques that we did for whatever condition we're talking about that month. So in September of 2025, our topic is all about building mental strength and having a morning routine. Like, how do you get up and have mental strength, discipline, focus, resilience, and get your mind and body ready for the day? And we have that same topic for the whole month. So we would love for you to join us in September 2025 for our Monday night class of the week. You can see the link to sign up in the show notes. All right, now we go back to the show.
When I go in and I teach Ayurveda, whether it's at Kripalu or whether it's at MUIH or if it's at a local studio or if it's on a Zoom, I try to use as few Sanskrit words as possible and really water it down so that it's in a language that anybody can understand. And I think the deeper you are in the Ayurveda, the more you're able to do that. It doesn't need to be all about doshas and prakriti and vikriti. There are other English words or whatever the language is that I can use to draw those parallels to people. So I think it's about language, and I think it's about skilled practitioners who have studied with Ayurvedic vaidyas, right? Their training should be by people who have trained with or are Ayurvedic vaidyas, doctors. Those are people who have studied and received their BAMS degree in India. We don't offer that here. They're medical doctors in Ayurveda, and they've had clinical experience, and they're able to do their research and draw the parallels. There should be this deep level of understanding, I think, from all parties. So I think it's about finding that common language. And again, the medicine must change with the times. So speaking to people in a way that is understandable to them is key. So that's the number one thing I think. For me, I love Sanskrit. I think it is absolutely beautiful. And when I teach yoga, I do say a lot of the Sanskrit yoga poses, but I also say them in English, and I say them in Sanskrit really just for myself because I feel like it's such a beautiful spiritual connection. In public classes, I try to really bite my tongue and not say it a lot because it confuses people, but I'm saying it to myself and I love that language. But when we're talking to a medical doctor and we start saying prakriti or vikriti or dosha or shrota or dhatus or, vayu, they're going to be very confused. So I think it's all about language and meeting people where they are and drawing those parallels that are already there for us to just access. We just have to know how to find them.
Yeah. You said so much there. And each time I was like, oh, yes, check, check, check. And if I were to just summarize it and tell me if I'm on track here, when I think of the word integrative Ayurveda, it makes me think about exactly what you said, someone who can see the 7,000-year-old ancient traditions of lifestyle management. Basically, that's what it is. And then also see the parallels that we have now proven through these randomized controls trials and these meta-analysis and all the evidence that we have. Someone that can kind of go back and forth and talk both languages, depending on who the person is in front of them.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's my vata. Feel free to rein me in any time.
No, I just, I think even this conversation is so interesting. You have a very, very pitta vata mind, meaning there's a lot of air and space and fire, and it is on. And somebody like me has a little bit more pitta kapha. So I slow it down, I repeat things, I say it another way. And, I think it's good to hear both, to just kind of go back and forth between the two for our listeners. So. Thanks for allowing me to put in the slower, more pared down versions.
One of my dear colleagues, her name is Shilpa, and I always say she's my kapha mama because I'll come in fiery and we'll be talking about Ayurveda, and she's also a registered dietitian, so we'll be talking about nutrition and Ayurveda, and she'll just go, whoa, whoa, whoa. We'll slow down together, and it's so beautiful. And I married a Kapha Pitta as well, so that I don't fly away. So yes, it's a beautiful.
We all need our opposite.
Yes.
So we've been talking about the applications of Ayurveda in healthcare settings and integrative Ayurveda for all the different licensed healthcare practitioners that you talked about, and just kind of noting that we have these four amazing core classes at MUIH that could get people started if they were interested. And I think those four classes, correct me if I'm wrong, because you and Tina Paul teach these classes, but it almost seems like it's the beginning of the journey. Like, learn Ayurveda for yourself, for self-care, dip your toe in, see how these practices work for you. Not that you couldn't use it for continuing education, but it's more about nourishment and self-care and doing it for yourself before you try to go do it for others. Would you say that's accurate with those four classes that we offer right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And what a gift. As a practitioner yourself, Amy, have you ever gone into, let's say, a yoga therapy session, and maybe you haven't cleansed your senses and you haven't done your meditation and you haven't eaten anything and you're dehydrated? And it's like, how do you show up versus if you're going into a yoga therapy session and you've taken care of your body and your mind and your heart, you know?
Yeah. I also think those four classes are so great for yoga teachers and yoga therapists who want more of an Ayurvedic lens. So they've already been trained as a yoga teacher or a yoga therapist, but now they're like, okay, I want to bring the Ayurveda into my yoga teaching or yoga therapy. Yeah.
Yeah, because we have foundations. And so that's where you're learning basic tridoshic theory. So the five elements, vata, pitta, and kapha, times of day, times of life, body types, mind types, mahaguna, sattva, rajas, and tamas, those sorts of things. The very foundational knowledge. And we have the nutrition course where you're learning about Ayurvedic diet, right? Which diet and lifestyle are the two things that we focus on. So diving into seasonal eating, what dinacharya looks like, what ruchacharya looks like. So your daily kind of eating routine and your seasonal eating routine. Although dinacharya means daily routine in general, ruchacharya means seasonal routine in general. You have Ayurveda of the mind, where you really do a deep dive into your manas prakriti, which is sort of the constitution of your mind and how to address that. There's a big focus on keeping good company and being in the presence of other vibrational beings that support you, which I think is sound life advice for anybody from 0 to 150 years old. Keep good company. And then the final course, which is the advanced Ayurvedic lifestyle skills, this is where you really dive into applying it to yourself and, you know, creating some material that if you are a licensed healthcare provider or a yoga therapist, you'll be able to create some handouts and different things that will actually support your business so you can add Ayurveda to what you're already doing, which is a huge deal, if you ask me.
Thanks for describing those four so succinctly. As you know, I just became chair and I'm still learning about the department. And so that was helpful to me too, to just really get a nice overview of all four of those classes. And so altogether, they become a post-bacc certificate, which means you have to have your bachelor's degree to even enter into those. Yeah.
Yes.
Great. All right. So let's switch gears a little bit here. When you and I were talking and I first came on board at MUIH, I told you one of my lifelong dreams is to see if we can't get more Ayurveda into education, especially for parents and teachers and children to help manage their stress, help them be more resilient, help them get good self-care routines and rituals going in the family, help them understand how important it is to get light in your eyes early in the morning and have some hot water and go to the bathroom. Like, I just think if we started kids off from a very early age, kind of learning these very simple, free ways to take care of themselves, the trajectory of that when you become 35 or 50 or 75 is profound. So, can you think of any ways that educators or parents might use Ayurveda to support their own resilience and regulate their stress throughout the academic year?
Yeah, Absolutely. I have to share with you a win. This is a great win. I teach yoga in my almost 7-year-old's first grade class. So I'm there once or twice a month, and they're just sweet little beings. It's been so great. And I was sharing with his teacher about walking after meals. And so now the whole class goes for a walk after lunch every day.
Oh gosh, that's so cute.
These little 6 and 7-year-olds are learning, oh, we should walk after we eat a big meal, and lunch should be the biggest meal of the day. And so that was a big win. So, yeah, I think there are a lot of ways too. As a parent, I have a 3 and a 6-year-old. And one of the biggest things for me that I like to also communicate to other parents, moms, dads, otherwise, is to take the shame out of not being able to do most of these things. There's no way, I have breastfed for 6 straight years. The kids sleep with me. It's an all-encompassing thing. So to continue the practice I had before children, which was waking at 4:30 and doing a very intense pranayama meditation practice in front of Agni, in front of fire, and then moving into asana and doing all, there was no way. I wasn't taking this like 2.5 hour journey into the self every day. I was surviving on leftover oatmeal and tears, So so I had a very, very strong tapas practice. That's the pitta in me. Sometimes maybe, past the point of it being healthy. Sometimes I could get very disciplined and I have to dial it back. That's something in my own personality. So all that to say, one of the things with parents is all the things you've learned today, if I'm doing a talk on daily and seasonal routine for families, or I just taught a really big, I think it was like 4-hour workshop on Ayurveda for parents. And I said, just pick 3 things I talked about today and do those 3 things. Maybe it's just that you go to bed every night instead of staying up and scrolling on your phone before 10. Maybe you're adding in Abhyanga, which is the warm oil massage, which as a parent, you can get very touched out. Right? You can get very touched out at the end of the day, especially if you have very little ones that are on you. So having some separation from other people touching you and allowing yourself to touch your body and improve your circulation from whatever you're doing, baby carrying, sitting, doing all the things. These little things can be so big. And the meals, just making a big, there's so much pressure for parents to get their kids to sit down to dinner. This is the worst time of day. You know what we call it in parenting? We call it the witching hour, because this is when the kids are exhausted, right? The glucose in their brain is at an all-time low because it's been working all day, playing whatever they're doing. I say, if you're home with babies, get your family to sit down for lunch instead of dinner, right? There's more energy there. It's supposed to be the bigger meal of the day anyway. That's when your metabolism is high. So finding these really simple things to get in. And as I'm an educator as well as a parent. So in this time of digital education, and all of my work at MUIH is online, it's so important to take brain breaks and take the screen breaks as well, like I talked about with the lights, having nature installations in your house. So in your eyes, Alochaka Pitta. So we have Pitta dosha in our eyes, and it's very fiery. Taking a break from the screens and staring at, even if you can't leave your desk, a nature installation, a plant, doing a 1-minute meditation on that. We can all do a 1-minute meditation. Looking at water, especially if you're an educator, you're probably a Pitta mind, right? Whether you're Pitta Vata, Pitta Kapha, or straight fiery Pitta or tridoshic, you're probably a Pitta mind. So looking at a water installation or blue colors, that Rupa Chikitsa, the color therapy, can be very, very helpful. I think for educators too, they're set up in a traditional setting. So not like what you and I are doing necessarily in higher education, where we don't have set class times in an asynchronous classroom necessarily. If we're teaching online, even if we're live, it could be a 6:30 to 9:30 class, or if you remember those, my gosh, those are so long, or a different kind of weekend class. But if you're a traditional educator, let's say in a public school system, and your day is, 8 a.m. or 7 a.m. until 3 or 4 p.m., somewhere in there, you do have that space early in the morning to take care of yourself. And then you have that space again in the afternoon where you could take care of yourself. So the challenge is taking 30 minutes here and 30 minutes there so that you can offer yourself back up, because nobody can pour from an empty cup. So there are a lot of little free, easy ways to fit it in without that all or nothing mentality. Just do 2 or 3 things.
I love that. And I remember, after I had been teaching at university for about 15 years, I went through an extreme burnout period to the point where I didn't know if I was going to be able to continue. And one of the changes I made was I set my office up in an Ayurvedic way, with a little water fountain, with music, with plants. I put a bean bag in there so I could do yoga nidra between classes, which was so funny because all the students wanted to come sit on the bean bag in my office when really it was for me. I got a do not disturb little sign for my door, and then it said, seriously, do not disturb, because they would all knock anyway. But you get the idea. I put a little refrigerator in there. I put a hot pot, things that I could heat up, a little soup or some hot water, keep some cucumber slices in the refrigerator. So I think there's things we can do within our day that maybe people don't even realize is Ayurvedically focused. But then I'm also even thinking about how a teacher, maybe of your 7-year-old, sets up their classroom.
Yeah, it's
Maybe they add a bunch of these
yeah.
things too for their own comfort as well as the comfort of the children. Wouldn't that be cool?
I completely agree with you. And I know there's such a lack of, funding in so many of the public schools. And we're in a lovely town in Connecticut. So we're, one of the lucky ones. And even so, it's still so challenging. But that's such a great point. And I hadn't thought of that. It's like I go in and teach yoga and I'm immediately anxious by all the things everywhere. I'm like, oh gosh, like, walk into the school and there's the Amazon delivery and everyone's chaotic and running around in the fluorescent lights. It's like, what would that look like to add plants? And then the kids get to take care of the plants. There's an added sense of responsibility there. Get a few fish, some things that are education-based.
And I always shop for all this type of thing at thrift store, because then if I want to change it up, it's like no big deal. Like, okay, I spent $3 on it. It's no big deal. We can have a new season. And I bring it back to the same thrift store.
You know what I love about that too, from an Ayurvedic standpoint? Too many choices is very rajasic. It's very vata deranging. And if you're going to a thrift store, it's not like going to a Target where you're going to have 17 different size, bowls you could buy. It's like there's these like three bowls and they're kitschy and they're different and they're weird and you get to pick one. It that feels so much more relaxing for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people think badly of thrifting, but I feel like it's a way to get pleasure and reuse things and then give things that you're no longer using back to someone else who might be on a budget that, I think there's like a whole spiritual thing going on with thrifting. I'll save that podcast for another time.
We could do one on the yamas and niyamas or something and definitely get deep in there.
Thrifting in the yamas and niyamas.
Yes, love that. Yeah, very beautiful. So I think there's a lot of ways and they're free. Even keeping Nasya oil right at your desk, those sorts of things. Aromatherapy, that's such an interesting field. And I think that a lot of the larger MLMs have ruined the reputation of aromatherapy, but there's a whole Ayurvedic aromatherapy practice depending on your dosha. If you know that, the kids in your class or the students in your class, adult learners in our instance, let's say we're teaching live for a yoga therapy weekend somewhere, maybe we'll want to have some sandalwood in there to pacify the pitta mind or some lavender in there to pacify the vata anxiety preparing for an exam, something like that. So these are little things that are easy to add on as well. You could wear it around your neck, put it on your pulse points. And that's where doshic analysis comes into play as well, which working with a practitioner is ideal, but you can also do a lot of these quizzes online for yourself and kind of get a decent picture of what your constitution is.
Yeah. Can you say a little bit about color therapy? Because a lot of times when I teach students about that, they are just shocked that the ancient Ayurvedic texts actually even mention that. And I think, especially for a classroom teacher, that could be super powerful to decorate the classroom and the bulletin boards and such with the colors that support what outcomes you want for those students in terms of their mental state, that type of thing. Can you say anything about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Or even seasonally, right? So right now, if you're listening to this or watching this in real time, we're in kapha season. So this is sort of the heavier season where things are slower. It's predominantly earth and water. It's sticky, it's cold, it's wet, it's stable, it's dense, it's gross. Not like ew, disgusting gross, but gross as opposed to subtle. And so the colors that would abate that are those that would sort of in a gentle way shock the system. So the brighter yellows and the brighter oranges, maybe even fluorescents, things that are a little bit more contrasting, right? So the blacks against the whites, things that are going to increase attention because there can be this lethargy that comes with this season. So let's say that you're working in a classroom, or let's say you're a yoga teacher, and you're going to teach a kapha balancing yoga class. I would wear my bright fluorescent yellow running bra, maybe, and my green leggings. And I might start the class standing up, and I might have some prayer flags on my tree or something that's bright, you know. So
And everybody's going to groan when you walk in like that, but that's what they need.
they will. I say, all right, we're starting standing up, breath of joy. We're not even centering. No Shavasana today. That would just be mean.
It's that Ayurvedic principle, though, that when we're out of balance, we kind of prefer to stay out of balance. And when someone walks in a neon outfit and it's like, okay, let's get up and get going, it's like, oh, but then afterwards you feel so great. And I just think of educators alone, let alone yoga teachers, but let's just stick with educators. If they knew how to create those opposites to bring the children back into balance, like that is powerful.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And so for Vata, which the schools are Vata deranged anyway, I volunteered for field day yesterday. It was 4.5, 5 hours and 500 kids outside running around. And then we're in and out of the school and the lights, and it's so Vata deranging, you know? So maybe even having things at the kids' desk that would pacify Vata. So I talked about kapha, pacifying kapha with some brights. And just for the record, too, I would actually start a kapha class sitting down, because you meet the dosha where they are. You don't just shock them. That'd be like running into a boulder, like Wile E. Coyote. You would just slide down. It wouldn't resonate. You got to start to nudge them so they start rolling. But that's neither here nor there. You know, maybe the kids could have something like a rock they found outside. That would be very Vata pacifying, to look at something from nature also that's stable. And then maybe something like a deep red, something earthy, maybe a flower they colored, or even a mandala they colored with earth tones that they could just sit and color to bring them back. Dim the lights. Those fluorescent lights are killer. They're killer for everyone, but especially Vata deranging. They're going to increase anxiety and mobility and make the kids feel like they're busy, like they're doing something, but they aren't. And so what happens there, especially with children, this is why screens can be so deleterious for their well-being, is screens and those artificial lights, they trick the brain into thinking the body is busy, but the body still needs movement, right? And so then there's this like increase in anxiety, and then the movement will come out in bursts. It won't come out appropriately. And now we see such a giant, you know, onslaught of ADHD diagnoses and all sorts of different behavioral things. I notice, especially with boys in school, even the most wonderful classrooms. Now, my teacher, actually, she's amazing, but a lot of really wonderful teachers, there's still this bias toward boys and their behavior, and they just need more movement. So I think, you know, getting some of those bright fluorescent assaulting lights and chaos out of the space and bringing it down with the earth tones, with the earth tone Rupa Chikitsa, that would be so helpful. And then that student might say, I need some movement, raise their hand, say, can I go out in the hallway? And our school allows this, and do some wall push-ups, or can I go walk around the block and come back? I need a little movement right now, or can I stand up and stretch? But it won't come out where they get up and they pretend their water bottle's a gun and start fighting, and, you know, like do all the things little kids will do if they don't have the appropriate direction of energy. I think that's really important.
Yeah. So I'm just also having a thought here that these four Ayurvedic classes that we talked about previously, they're almost like a foundational blueprint that you could apply to the setting. So like if a teacher wanted to take them, they could get like the lifestyle routine, the food, the sleep, the daily rituals and rhythms down for their own self-care and healing. But then they could take some of these other things we've been talking about and apply them to their classrooms professionally, and maybe even teach the students some of these things as well as the parents.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in a way that's so digestible, no pun intended. There are so many links. And, you know, MUIH also offers a master's in clinical nutrition, which is where I did mine. And I think it was year before last, that degree leads you to be able to sit for a board exam with ANA, which is the BCNS board exam. So you have a CNS credential and can get licensed. And they do a yearly conference. It was last year or the year before, the whole conference was on nutrition and behavior, mental health, right? What a huge disconnect we have in our world One of the things I like to talk about with parents too is halt, right? So if their child is throwing a tantrum or acting out of line in a way that's like crazy and they're throwing things or, mom, I hate you, and they're fighting with their sibling or whatever it is, ask before you start to kind of discipline or get upset at the child for how they're behaving. Are they hungry? Are they angry? Are they lonely? Or are they tired? That's so Ayurvedic, right? Like, do you
What if
need,
I'm all four?
if you're all four, it is time for an intervention. If you're hungry, right, the diet is built in Ayurveda so that you're eating three steady meals a day. So that hungry should be taken care of, right? You have a routine, you eat breakfast in the morning, lunch in the middle of the day, dinner early in the evening. If you're angry, right, Ayurveda suggests that all feelings are welcome and they are all okay. And, not to go, to the niyamas, but santosha, in this moment, enough is enough. I am enough. Enoughness. We're okay. That feeling's okay. Can you watch it, allow it, and let it be? What if kids knew that? Like, what if teachers knew that and kids knew that? We don't need to be looking at the behavior. What is the anger coming from? Right? Lonely companionship. That's part of Ayurveda too. We need each other. We are each other. We're really in this world only as separate as the fingers on our hands. We're not apart from one another. Ayurveda teaches that with the idea of Purusha and Prakriti from Sankhya philosophy. We have this consciousness and we have primordial matter, and they come together and boom, thus creates all that is. So, are you lonely? Does this student need a hug? Do I need a hug as a teacher? Do I need a hug? Do I need to pet my dog? Do I need to lay down and think of someone I love and what they might say to me? Am I tired? Are we getting enough sleep? No, none of us are. So, that's easy Ayurveda stuff too. These things are built into our system. They're built into the Dinacharya daily routine, and they're built into Ritucharya seasonal routine, and they're built into this general underpinning of listen and answer. Listen and answer. How do I feel? What do I need? Who's answering? Is it me? Is it true? Take what you need. It's okay. We don't need somebody else to give us permission to. That's the most empowering thing we could teach our students, our children, our educators, ourselves. If the body is doing something, or the mind is doing something, or the heart is doing something, there's nothing bad about that. That is information that our body is giving us. Can we listen and see what's under it and then offer? Right? Like increases like, we treat with opposites in Ayurveda. So if I'm feeling empty in my tummy, let's fill it up with food. If I'm feeling angry in my heart, can we process that and get to the other side of anger? What's the opposite of anger? I'm not sure. That's going to probably be different for everybody. So those are some of my thoughts on that too, is it's so laid out in the Ayurvedic tradition. And if we just had permission to listen, or took permission to listen, everybody would be in a better place. Students would be in a better place, and then they would grow and lead this to their children, should they have children, or their students, or their friends, or their colleagues, and so on and so forth. It'd just be in a happier, more balanced world.
It's so interesting because, like you said, these ancient teachings, it's really laid out clearly and can be very simple. And when I hear you talk, it's like common sense, right? But somehow we've lost connection with that and we're feeling delinked from our true nature, delinked from Mother Nature, delinked from one another. And I really just think it's time for us to kind of get back to simplicity, balance, common sense. And I kind of see this actually happening in our local communities, that people are kind of pulling inward a little bit, not being so stretched out and stretched thin, and they're coming back to the basics of being human.
Stepping out of the Maya, right? It's what's actually real within us. We've all been, everybody, listening, yourself, myself, I'm certain, have all been in a situation where instead of listening to ourselves and our intuition, what we already knew, like we already knew the answer, but we needed somebody else to tell us. Just we don't actually.
Hundreds.
In your DNA.
Yeah. And then after you hear it, you think, well, that's common sense. Of course, I should have done that. But it's kind of like being at Starbucks right now. There's so many choices. You're looking around, wondering which one you should choose, when really you just need that cup of hot water in the morning. You know, like it's that. And after you do that a few days, you're like, gosh, this feels so good. Why wasn't I doing this?
Yeah. And clinically, that's one of the ways to tell if you need the hot water. So here's a little free Ayurvedic tip. If you start drinking hot water, which is really important for hydration, but warm water is generally when you're in a more balanced state of physiology, you'll end up wanting warm water. But if you're drinking hot water and you continue to crave the hot water, that is your body's intelligence telling you to drink the hot water. And what that's doing, couple of things. One is hot water is one of the number one ama pachanas. So it's one of the number one ways to clear ama, which is like you could think about that from a modern science perspective as like oxidative stress, let's say inflammation, all of the things that are going wily in the body are caused from this ama, this toxic sludge that Ayurveda defines. It's not really like a tangible thing. So anyway, hot water does that. It also stokes your digestive fire. So if you're drinking hot water for a day, which the prescription for that would be about 1 ounce per kilogram or half pound of body weight for a full day, and you want it the next day, you need it, and your body will tell you when to stop. Just listen, if you go to pour that hot water on day 14 and you're like, I don't want hot water, I just want plain room temperature water, you've done it, you did it, good job, you got to it. If you don't want the hot water at all when you take that first couple of sips, that's normal. Get through the bottom of one glass, and if you want it again, that's really good information for your body. I thought that was a really good clinical pearl I learned all those years back, and it's really rang true for me. Another free, easy one we can all do at home.
That's what I love. Once you learn it, it's yours to pass on and to use for yourself.
And I loved what you said too about it. You know, once you hear it, you can't unhear it. Once somebody says it to you, you can't unhear it. What would it look like to have a practice every day that sort of clears the mud from the windshield of your mind? In Ayurvedic terms, that would be clearing the tamas from the mind to reveal sattva or peace. What would it look like to have a practice every day, whether that's journaling or reading something in the classical texts or a poem that you love and then self-reflecting? What would it look like to have something every single day that you did for yourself that gave you the confidence, the empowerment, the awe and reverence for your own body and your own self that would help you listen to it? That when you were tired in the middle of the day, even though you slept for 7 or 8 hours the night before and you're tired in the middle of the day, you don't go Googling, you know, did I get enough sleep? You just
Right.
take a nap, you just lay down, or you just sleep more the next night. Like your body knows way more than your brain, and it certainly knows more than a TikTok healthcare professional. So please listen and do something every morning, whether it's just writing down an affirmation or intention or reading a poem or stepping out in nature and taking 5 deep breaths and literally saying, how do I feel today and what do I need in my body? How do I feel today and what do I need in my heart? How do I feel today and what do I need in my mind? And allowing without shame, without judgment, the answers to come to you and just doing those things. This is an N equals one experiment. This is your life. And you're taking control of it again. This is the way toward optimal, wonderful health.
Yeah. And like you said, we don't need permission from someone else. I think we've somehow outsourced our health, our intuition, our inner knowing. We're always looking out there. And like you said, we can ask ourselves and give ourselves permission. Yeah, you deserve a nap today. It's okay. No shame. Well, Sarah, you've given us so much to think about today. Thank you for all of your generosity of spirit and knowledge. And you will be teaching these Ayurveda classes, which could be applied to a licensed healthcare practitioner, to an educator, or to really anyone who just wants to learn more about their own self-care and rituals and routines according to nature. So you're always teaching these Ayurveda classes, but what about your private business? Do you see people online for a consultation?
Yes, I do. Yep, I do see people online and I do it in an integrative fashion. So I merge, you know, integrative clinical nutrition with Ayurveda, wherein people will work with me telehealth and send me, you know, their intake form, pictures of their tongue, their hands, their face, their body. And they can also send me recent lab work. I can work integratively. I'm licensed in the state of Connecticut. I can work integratively with their healthcare provider. So, you know, should they need functional tests, I have a national provider number. I could send information and we can work in that functional way as well and really give a basic, you know, toolkit of Ayurveda that they can take home and do anytime. So it's sort of a merging of both worlds that I do. Yeah.
Great. So your website, if they'd like to come find you, is Sarah Jean Rudman, SARAJEANRUDMAN rudman.com, sarahjeanrudman.com. And I have it pulled up here on the screen for those of us looking at it from the YouTube video. Is there anything else you want to tell us about what you do? I see you have a Sarah Jean Rudman community coming soon and online courses coming soon. Anything you want to tell us about?
Yeah, so the online courses are exciting and we're building those out in Kajabi now. I'm also faculty at Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health. So I teach Ayurveda, yoga, all the things there as well. And I wanted to also sort of boost our program with one more thing because there are a lot of Ayurvedic programs out there, Amy. Like people can sign up for, $97 for an Ayurvedic certification at a myriad of different online places. But what's different about what we do at MUIH is we are an accredited education institution, which means you're getting quality. You know you're getting quality because we get assessed every 5 years. There's no way around that quality, right? Our learning outcomes, everything is aligned. So our program is really good and it is academic and it is sort of like a next level different Ayurveda training. So I just wanted to add that as well. And then as far as myself, yeah, I'm teaching at MUIH. I'm also teaching at Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health. And we do have some online communities coming as well. There's a new project that I'm launching called the Replacement Project, which is sort of a fun thing to do. And as Amy knows, my number one priority right now is to plow through the end of my dissertation that I put on hold for 3.5 years when I had my little one. But after that, we're launching something called the Replacement Project. My husband is actually in the wine and spirits industry. He owns a wine school in Manhattan, and I am working to help people through the lens of Ayurveda reduce harm and create new behavior patterns by replacing maybe a nightly glass of wine to calm down with something like a nightly meditation or walk in nature. That's a really exciting project that I'm working on now, too. That involves Ayurveda, health and wellness coaching, behavior change, and harm reduction through the science of all of these things that we're talking about.
So just so I got this straight, your husband works in the wine industry, and yet he's helping you with this placement project.
And we hope to actually put out a course through his company, which is the International Wine Center. Not this year. We have too much going on this year, but next year about safe consumption and about how to responsibly and ethically consume alcohol should you choose that path as well. So he's totally on board for that as well because, it's about the appreciation and the study of wine and not the overconsumption of wine. There's a lot of, Ayurvedic philosophy around choice making, behavior change, habit loops, and what that might look like for somebody should they choose to be a teetotaler or have a glass once a year or have a glass once a week. There's space for everybody in that project too. So that's coming down the pipe in the future once we're through the dissertation. One thing at a time.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your knowledge. And I wish all good things that are coming to you. You have so much wisdom and presence and joy to share with all of us. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy, and thanks for having me. It's such an honor to work and be in your brilliance and in this expansive space of growing together, collaborating. I just feel really grateful to know you and be here with you today and always.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah Jean, for being with us today. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. And now I'm wanting to come to you for a private consultation. It's so clear that you have spent the time to really figure out how to help humans from both the Western perspective and the Eastern perspective. And I love that. That's integrative, right? So one other thing I wanted to mention before we leave today, we talked today about the Ayurveda program at Maryland University of Integrative Health, which will soon become Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health, where we're merging, and that will happen sometime in the next few months. But what I want to say is that we also have a new post-master's therapeutic yoga program that we're offering not only to licensed healthcare practitioners, but also to anyone who already has a master's degree in a different field, but would now like to specialize in therapeutic yoga. Like our Ayurveda program, the therapeutic yoga program for the post-master's degree is all about implementing yogic principles and practices into your current job or career. So if you're a doctor, if you're a nurse, a physician assistant, and beyond, a psychologist, a social worker, there's so many different professions out there that would like to teach therapeutic yoga. The postures, the breathing, the meditation, the yoga nidra, those are the things that we're going to teach you, as well as the ethical principles, what we call the yamas and the niyamas that come from the ancient texts. These are all things that we would like educators who have a master's degree, healthcare providers, or anyone else, maybe somebody in contemplative studies that wants to start putting yoga into their current career, or maybe even a chaplain that wants to learn more about breathing techniques. I even think we could have someone like a sports psychologist that wants to learn these things. So we welcome you to this new program that we're offering at MUIH. Thank you so much. I'll put everything in the show notes. Thank you to our guest this week, and thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Something that I've been working on behind the scenes with my friend Marlisa Sullivan is going to come out in 2026. We've been writing a book together for the last year where we go deeply into yoga philosophy and yoga therapy. And then we have the scientific vagus nerve, heart rate variability, all sorts of polyvagal theory to back up why it is that yoga philosophy is right on track and why it's been helping people for thousands of years. We're turning in our book this fall to the publisher, and in the spring of 2026, it should come out. So we're just giving you a little heads up that that will be coming out soon. And when it does, we can't wait to share it with you. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.